State and Federal Affairs Subcommittee on Governmental Reorganization meeting Monday, March 8th, Room 106B on House Bill 1061.
We count orders with authority. Yeah, but this is the vice chairman.
Hearing aid specialist.
Whatever this is, it's count orders. Attorney General Lee Johnson, and to testify on House Bill 1061.
Chairman.
Members of the committee, I have given your clerk some amendments to Section 45 of House Bill 1061, which deals with action to recover for overpayments, payments that were improperly granted under old age assistance and medical assistance. As the bill is presently drafted, it would transfer the entire responsibility to the Department of Justice for our Welfare Recovery Division. These amendments would essentially just put concurrent jurisdiction in the district attorneys and the Welfare Recovery Division of the Department of Justice. But I thought while I was here, I might talk a little bit about this whole area because I think there is some misunderstanding as to what our role is. And there were some comments made the other day by one member of the House, which I somewhat facetiously suggested that he maybe ought to attend the Ways and Means Committee and find out what's going on in state government. But more seriously, I do think indicated a lack of understanding of what programs are going on in the area of overpayment and fraud in the welfare program. Basically, this Section 45 deals with civil recovery. And frankly, we are, at the state level, cutting back some of our effort in civil recovery because we feel it's a fruitless effort. When I came into office, the Welfare Recovery Division had $900,000 of judgments on the books, most of which were worthless. We were collecting an annually about $35,000 a year at a cost of about $50,000 a year. And it was my suggestion to the emergency board, and it was approved, that basically we only pursue those cases of civil recovery where there's a real chance of recovering some money, and it would be much more important that we establish a credible criminal deterrent. And that was the reason the Welfare Fraud Unit was established within the Department of Justice. It was established with 3.5 investigators. Last biennium, we are asking for the unit to be substantially increased this biennium. But there was some question as to why we haven't prosecuted more cases. The fact is, we under that program, we don't intend to prosecute cases. Rather, the Welfare Fraud Unit is designed to investigate and to develop cases. They are then turned over to the DAs to prosecution. And through our office, we felt we had good enough relationships with the DAs. And by putting these investigations under the supervision of an attorney, we could put together cases that were ready to go, so when they were presented to the DA, he can handle them with a minimum of effort. We've had extremely good cooperation from the DAs as a result of that. Just to give you some statistics, we've had a total of 675 cases. This was during the first 8 months of operation for this unit. We had 675 cases referred. 78 were referred for prosecution. 78 indictments were rendered, and to date there are 27 convictions. Anticipate there'll probably be convictions in all 78 of those cases, but it does take time to get cases through the courts. But they are basically, once they are turned over to the DAs, they are his responsibility. Now, the governor has made it clear that if any time DAs don't cooperate with us, trying to enforce this area of the law, he would have us step in, but I don't, to date, that has not been necessary, and I don't think it will be necessary in the future. Basically, I think this is a pretty, I don't see how anybody could say that other than that this is a pretty good performance for three and a half investigators in 8 months' time. I'd be glad to answer any questions, but basically the amendment we're providing just simply provides that there would be concurrent jurisdiction with the DAs and with our office, because sometimes we do have occasion to handle them. It's easier for us to handle them than this with the DA.
Other questions, please?
No.
Ed? Lee, I'm concerned about split authority. Now, who has the ultimate authority in such matters?
As far as who prosecutes?
Yeah, if you write it in here that you and the district attorney.
Well, I think basically what I'm really trying to get at, Representative Ingalls, is that this is the area of civil recovery. If the DA, you're not going to have too many cases of civil recovery, particularly in old age assistance.
Are you going to initiate all action? I guess this is what I'm trying to say. And then you investigate the case.
Basically, under this section, we're not going to initiate very many cases at all, because we have very few cases that we can recover money back. What we are going to undertake is investigations to determine whether the criminal prosecution should be brought. And our principal effort to date has been in the field of checks. The fraud cases we've submitted for prosecution represent about $250,000 of fraudulent checks. This is welfare checks. One of the most common things we find is stealing the check and then fraudulently endorsing it. Indeed, there have been instances where the investigator just follows the postman and pulls him out of it. Sees the guys pull them out of the post box, or where the recipient themselves claims the check was stolen, and then makes another claim against the state.
Well, now the Welfare Recovery Division, there's no change in that.
No, the Welfare Recovery Division now, other than we do some civil fraud recovery there. In fact, we recovered about $35,000 this year, even though we don't have much manpower to go to that. As we did in the past, we covered just about the same amount. But we're only taking those cases we think have got some money in them. Their principal area is in the area of noun support, enforcing noun support obligation, or support obligation, where a father has been under a divorce decree to pay so many dollars for the support of his children, paternity suits, this type of thing. And of course, that's civil, and of course, that's all a direct offset against the recipient's grant.
Will you take action of that kind only at the request of the Welfare Department, or just how does that relationship
work? Under the Welfare Recovery Division?
Yeah.
Well, we've got a problem right now, Representative Patterson. Under the Oregon law, they are required, each recipient is required to report and cooperate with the Welfare Recovery Division in trying to track down any support obligations that they're entitled to. But we are under a temporary injunction from the federal court as to that law requiring them to cooperate. So at the present time, it's on a voluntary basis, but they are referred to us. The Welfare Division refers all recipients to us. We in turn interview them and develop facts to whether they have some support obligations coming.
Doesn't Mr. Juris also have an investigating team to do that?
Well, now you're going in the area, going back into the area of fraud again.
Oh, I see.
This is noun support. This is collecting what the family or the children and the mother are rightfully entitled to or legally entitled to as a matter of supporting the father, the errant father, wherever he may be. And that becomes, what they do is essentially assign that obligation to the state. In return, they get their welfare check, when we recover it, it goes right into the welfare division as an offset against your grant. In the area of fraud, there are two units, essentially. There is one is in the welfare division, Mr. Juris's agency. And then there is our agency, which is in the area of welfare fraud also. But they are very different responsibilities. We are investigating cases for criminal prosecution, violation of the state's criminal law, forgery, theft, what have you. The welfare division is only investigating for eligibility. And the reason we have to keep them separate is because you couldn't get federal funding for our operation, because it's part of the traditional operation of law enforcement obligation. Eligibility investigation, of course, you are entitled to federal matching funds for. Most of our cases are, a great percentage of our cases do come to us from the welfare division's investigative unit. They get the initial lead and we go from there. We have a very good, close working relationship between the two, but they are carrying on very different functions. I know there's been a lot of confusion about this. Frankly, we had come into the legislature session, both the executive, the welfare division, and ourselves, with the idea of combining the two units into one under our jurisdiction. Upon further consideration, we decided that this was not wise, primarily because it would jeopardize federal funding.
Are there any more questions of that?
But as a working relationship, there's no problem.
Thank you very much, man.
Secretary. Mm-hmm.
I'm a member of this state advisory committee on welfare that they want to do away with. That's in this bill you're talking about, 1061, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, 1061.
Also, I have evidence opposition to doing away with the county commissions on several occasions, last session, this session. I think taking this away from the people is a mistake for many reasons. And I think a county administrator and a county commission properly, with a proper administration, is close to the people, knows the problems of that particular county, and satisfies the people when they have complaints or when they want something, they go to apply or anything. I think there's a better feeling with a commission that has a little power. Of course, the commissions have complained for years that they really were rubber stamped for the state. I never found them that way in some of the cases I saw fit to go to different county commissioners about, and I've had complaints from all over the state, and I have phoned county commissioners in various other counties and gotten their help, and they've taken care of matters that could have been pretty serious. And so I have faith in the county commissions, and I think it's wrong to take it so far away from the people. As far as the abolishing the state welfare commission, I think this was a big mistake. And I think I've said before some committees, and whether I've said it before you or not, but at the time we were down talking to the emergency board to try to get some money at the time that we were going to be short of money this biennium, Representative Hansel made the remark that if we had the old commission with some teeth in it, maybe we wouldn't have found ourselves in this. In other words, the commission could have voted and advised and discussed it with the welfare administrator and voted what to do, and maybe something different might have come out of it. And I told them that that was true. We not only didn't have teeth, we didn't even have dentures. And we didn't have dentures. We don't have them now. I spent practically all day Friday with this advisory committee on welfare. I learned something, and I maybe said some things, and it was interesting, and I'm sure we helped the department, but they didn't have to pay one doggone bit of attention to what we said. It's up to them. In fact, we have something to vote on, and I'm sure Mr. Juris, my saying this, and He hoped we'd vote on it. He said, but if you don't, I have to do it anyway. I feel I have to do it. But we didn't. I said, let him stick his neck out on his own. Because very few of us believed, were sure. Not that it was some big mistake, but it concerned people living in little auto trailers or whatever they were. Old people particularly who were going to be cut a little in some things. Some wouldn't be cut, some would, but some of us were a little fearful of what it meant to some of the old people. It was the second time it come up, and we just didn't want to vote on doing this. But he went ahead, and he said he had to do it anyway. So I figure we've been sort of a toothless wonder sitting there. And while I think that it is good that people discuss these things, and the committee represents, it has members of the old commission on it, and we certainly benefit from them, and we have five ABC mothers on it, and we have a minority leader on it, and I'm supposed, I understand, to represent the aged, blind, handicapped, nursing homes, and what have you, and the legislature, I guess. And we have someone in education and one administrator of a private agency and one man from a bank, and well, I don't know who all, a minister, and the minister is a former. Don't have any assurance when we leave that anything we said is going to be paid any attention to. In the very beginning, I objected to this, and the governor, during a lunch hour, governor, I said the governor told me our advice is going to be seriously considered, and during the lunch hour, a quite lengthy letter came to me from the governor reassuring me of this and a copy for everyone concerned. And I appreciate the honor of serving on this committee, and all during last session I was excused when these met, as I had been excused always to go to Welfare Commission meetings. I could do everything but vote at those meetings, so it isn't that I ever had the right to vote, but I could sure say what I wanted, and the people I talked to could vote. But I think we've been a sounding off board for the department, for Mr. Juris and his staff. And maybe in some occasions, he would admit that maybe we've given him some good advice. But the thing is, he doesn't have to take it. So I don't know whether when setting up this Public Welfare Review Commission, if they're what they're going to do, we were to advise. Now, if they're just to review and they're not to, what are they reviewing for? Are they going to have any say in what goes on? I would like to see us have the old State Welfare Commission and keep the county commissions with a little power. And particularly after I've studied all day Friday the Task Force on Welfare's report, and the last 2 days I've read, penciled it here and there and marked it out and reread, penciled it. And if we follow some of the things that are in that, let alone some of the bills that are in the hopper, I just don't see how we can be passing this legislation and taking away. You gotta have somebody there with power. I know the governor wants to run the show, it's his show, and he's responsible for it. But what's the difference in having commissions and set up that have some of the people outside in than be sitting there running the show and delegating this authority to that one and that one and that one? And he has to take their advice, and sometimes their advice, I came from a meeting a little bit ago on mental retardation. And I'm not so sure that he's had the right advice. But it seems to me if they have a commission that's responsible for what they vote that the commission should do and all, he's going to be pretty sure of the advice he gets. And if he has something that's so worthwhile and submits it to this department, I think they'll try to work it out. Now, there must be something wrong with this advisory committee. I've attended all the meetings except one. I had to be elsewhere. And I haven't put in all my bill, but we're allowed lunch money and travel money is all, of course. But I don't know if we've even been worth that, if all of a sudden they want to change us to something else and kick us out and put something else in, because I think, with the exception of one group that's been represented, I think the members have been very faithful in their attendance, most of them, and I'm sure that any who have been away have had good reasons for being away. But I'm just opposed to this. I am opposed to to abolishing the, I was opposed and to abolishing the commission. I still think they were doing a good job, and I think they should be back, and I think the county commission should be kept. But on the state advisory committee, I'd like to know what we've done wrong, because we haven't been given the right to do anything. We just are there to advise, and then when we leave, they can tear up the advice we give and do as they please anyway, unless they benefited by some of the things he said or some of the suggestions. So I don't know what this review commission is going to do that's different. They're going to look it over instead of advise, I guess. But surely if they're going to set up, you ought to put some teeth in their mouth so that they can at least have some reason for being a public welfare review commission. The way I feel about it, and I think it might be well to not act too hurriedly on this in view of what is in the hopper and is going to be put in the hopper, I think, as a result of some of the recommendations, because the way things are getting, the welfare department is going to be called upon to do a lot more than it's doing, and if some of the recommendations are carried out, they're not going to have as many people to do it with either as they should need. And it seems to me they need something other than just someone advising them. I think they need someone that could take things seriously, even back in the counties, and give them a little more power in the counties than they've had before. And as far as I'm concerned, whether I'm on this, stay on this committee, I do a 3-year term and we withdraw, so to speak, with a time, 1, 2, or 3 years, or whether I'm on the new committee or not, this is not of importance to me, because if I'm on the committee, fine. If I'm not, I'll be there anyway. So it's been my habit to sit in on these things. I give this some serious consideration. If so much seems to be wrong, there's so much. I can remember when I could go to a meeting, and if I was going to talk about welfare, they'd hand me the bomb and the list, and then tell me, well, we got just 1 minute. Just say, can you say what we're sorry, but can you say what you want to? Now everybody's talking about welfare, most of them pointing the finger at it, but everybody, welfare is a big word now. It used to be kind of a hush word, but it's a big word now, and I think this is mighty important. Thank you.
Ms. Beck, we very much appreciate you coming. I think we strengthened this county welfare board, or commission, whatever we're calling them, to a considerable extent. And I think that you're right that this has to be added to the certification. I'm sorry, Governor. So we're going to work on that. We have some amendments to the bill that I'll want you to see before we do anything with it.
Well, I appreciate it, because I've shown my interest in welfare, and I've defended it, and it hurts me when I have to disagree with the jurors and the staff from time to time, but I do. There's times when I do, and there are honest disagreements, and there was a time when I first came here, I was all giving everything away, you know, to everything that people asked. Now, there are some people, recipients, who think, oh, Grace has gone to the welfare commission, you know, see. But I've learned that the taxpayers have to be considered first, and then when we have three kinds of people, maybe Rory Gorman, who can't get a dime from welfare, I'm getting a little critical of what we do for every other town, Dick and Harry, who lands in Oregon. We don't have anything for deserving, and I mean not bums, but deserving, single employable men up to 50 and single employable women up to 50. Or childless couples up to 59. Mr. Juris heard me say this before. This is a great answer to the doggone birth control. If you practice it, you can starve to death if you lose your job before you're 50, and if you haven't got any kids. But this is the truth. Good couples. If she couldn't keep house, if she found some old duck to keep house for, and he could be watchman, they could get together once a week or so as man and wife if they get out and get some jobs, but there are no jobs for them. So if they can get the money together, buy some food stamps, fine. Otherwise, they can't get a penny from us, even though they need to pay taxes the first 40 years of their lives. I think this is terrible, but if we're going to have it this way, we should have the best program that we possibly can have. And I just think we can do it better with some of the right kind of people interested in it, and a chance if you do voice something, you can vote on it, help. Mr. Juris is doing a good job. I'm not criticizing him, although we differ once in a while. But ye gods, he's going to be snow white haired if he's called upon to do all the things he says he can do, or he's asked to do, and he seems to think he can do, and with cutting his staff and everything else, next session, God willing, we're here, he'll come in like this, I'll bet you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We appreciate you coming. Are you working with Ben here, or is he?
I've been working with Andy and with the Attorney General. This is, I think, an integrated set of amendments from both Andy's amendment and those of the Attorney General, all integrated into one set.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Get back to my meeting. I'm trying to let you know about
yes,
it.
Yes, ma'am. You'll be talking.
We want to talk about this.
Plus the ones we turned down to supply. We have no additional amendments to offer. I was going to testify, but Lee thought he'd come over himself and present his amendments personally rather than having me introduce them for him and make some additional comments. We have nothing further to offer on the bill, but I do understand that there are some questions that the county would still like to raise, so I would ask you to defer action on the bill until Mrs. Peck, for example, may have had a chance to look at the amendments and that we solve some questions between the association of counties and our previously submitted amendments.
Jerry, do you have amendments to this, too?
No, sir, no. I just wanted to ask some questions.
As we go along, or...
Pardon?
As we go along, or what?
When? No, other than when you're meeting, I'm saying after the meeting,
we were going to get together after the meeting. I thought you might want to defer action until your work session tomorrow.
Right.
And we can iron out the differences.
Well, do you want to walk the through these amendments?
I'll be glad to try.
Copy the bill.
The ones on top are the ones the Attorney General related to, and we've reworded them a little bit in the way he submitted them to us. In essence, on line 14, after the word instituted, it deletes the rest of the line and puts by. And with the top three amendments, the language would read, the action shall be instituted by the district attorney or the welfare recovery division of the Department of Justice or by attorneys and so forth. Now, this is actually restoring existing language. When you were asking questions, concurrent jurisdiction, there is concurrent jurisdiction right now. The effect of the amendments is only to delete, in effect, the county commission, because the county commission is abolished by the balance of the act. And it restores, in effect, the district attorney as having jurisdiction to prosecute under this section. So that's the essence of all these line 23, or page 23 amendments. On page 32, in an attempt to more effectively describe the role of the county welfare, County Public Welfare Board, on line 10, it inserts this additional language and moves what would be line or two down to line 3. So in effect, it adds the responsibility to evaluate the effectiveness of public welfare programs and relate to local needs. Determine the need and develop locally sponsored programs to augment public welfare programs, to interpret public welfare programs, and inform the public. This relates a little bit toward the thrust of providing employment of last resorts in the local communities through local government employers. It creates a better framework for doing that if such a thing should evolve, and spells out in some greater detail the purpose and role of what the County Welfare Board shall be. Moving down the page.
Just one second, if we can. Is there any value to asking them to report complaints to the Welfare Commission? Giving them that responsibility in law?
I think there is value. I'm not sure that it hasn't been provided in subsection 3, which starts on line 14.
Of the same page?
Of the same page.
Recommend any changes?
Recommend changes if any are needed in the program. I'm not sure that may not accommodate what you're talking about.
No, it really doesn't. What I don't like is the complaints that are offered by citizens to the county commissioners, and they say, I'm sorry, that's tough, or we can't do anything about it, or that's the way it goes, and so on.
Would you suggest that we put language in to...
Well, I keep trying to strengthen the role of the county in this thing, and I think if they had the responsibility to report those complaints, I'd like to see it in the statute, like that. Is that all right with you, Andy?
Yes, I was wondering, you might want to, Mr. Chairman, on line 9 of the bill, section 7, it says, receive information from local citizens. You could reword that a little bit the way you're saying.
Yeah, that's fine. That would be good.
Would you like to have "and" complaint put right in there?
Well, I'd like to have them required to pass the complaint on. That's what I'm concerned about. I don't care if they receive the complaint and don't do anything about it. Well, that doesn't do any good, I don't think. But I think it should be reported on up to the chain of command.
Well, let us see if we can draft some language to accommodate that and bring it back to you tomorrow.
Okay.
So that we can work it in there.
I don't know how the rest of the committee feels about it, but we'll pick it up when we...
Okay, then moving on down the page, this is line 32, 2 to 3, this is housekeeping, 3 to 4 is the housekeeping. Getting down to 32, page 32, line 19, this is a significant change. It would increase the number of this proposed public welfare review commission to 15 members, up from 8. As I explained to you earlier, our proposal to the task force in the interim had been for an 11-member commission, which would have provided 8 from the counties and 3 at large at the discretion of the director or the governor. This expands it from our previous count of 11 to 15. The reason we did it this way is to provide to still get 8 people from the counties in and provide a basis for 1/3 of the membership to be recipients. And this 1/3 requirement is a federal regulation, if I'm not mistaken, that says that these statewide welfare advisory committees, which are required apparently by federal statute or federal regulation, that on such boards or commissions or whatever they're called, there must be 1/3 of the membership devoted to recipient or representatives of recipient types. And this is to provide a basis for getting that 1/3. There's no number, but the ratio has to be there. This would allow 5 members to be recipients, 8 from the counties, and then 2 additional at large. And that's the basis of this recommendation here.
In addressing ourselves to Grace's complaint, what authority, if any, does this group have? Is it just like window dressing?
I'd rather let Andy answer that question.
Well, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the way this is stated with the revision, or even without the revision that we propose here, it still basically is an advisory committee. On the basis that the governor is directly responsible for the public welfare division. And as I explained before, you can see the problem here. If you have an administrative policy-making state commission, then they promulgate the policy and the administrative regulations under which the agency operates. When you have the governor responsible for it, he's the one then that sees to it that the agency, you know, promulgates the rules and regulations in terms of the thrust of the program he wants. So I don't see how you can have the governor in charge of the agency and have an administrative policy-making body here which may not follow his thrust or his direction. I think that's the problem in it. You see, when we had the state commission before, the governor appointed the state commission, but they really were responsible for the thrust of the program.
They were?
Yes, they were. It's kind of the same problem you see when you get down to the local commissions, I feel. How can you have 36 local commissions running the program the way they want to, contrary to the governor's of the program.
The governor takes his order from ATW, I presume.
Well, in part, we have to, yes.
One of the problems that I've heard about in this is that they do not have access to all the information needed to arrive at certain conclusions. You know, they want to provide an input, and I can certainly understand the problem that Andy's talking about. You just, somebody has to be responsible. And I think if it's necessary to write into the statutes that these people serving in their advisory capacity will have access to all materials, or will somehow, whatever the wording may be. This has been the drawback of the county boards, I think, is they have been told in some cases they do not have access to records, are not entitled to investigate certain cases and this type of thing. I don't think anyone wants the responsibility necessarily of the administration, but they do want to provide some input, and they cannot provide the input unless they do have access to all this information. So maybe it is necessary to write, whether we give them responsibility or not, for administration, I don't think that's going to work. That's just not a good management policy, at least in my opinion. We do need somehow to maintain their input.
Mr. Chairman, speaking to this particular point, we produced amendments related to the counties to give them, and it's on the very bottom line of these amendments I handed you, to give them access to review listings of persons receiving public assistance. You may want to expand the word listings into information. Rather than just list the names, you might want to add similar language to the role of the state commission. I'd want you to qualify it acting through the suggestion. I want to qualify it acting through its chairman, so that it wasn't 15 different people all the time, but through the chairman, the commission may have access to and. You could work language up that would be satisfactory.
You're talking about the county or the state?
Both, if that's the thrust of what you like.
Both, I think that's good.
We can get that kind of
idea. Larry, you got any opinion on that? Why don't you guys come up here and join the committee?
Good idea.
I think, Mr. Chairman, there's been more misunderstanding about this availability of information than the fact that it hasn't been. Because we discussed this last time, this information that members of county public welfare commissions have had a right to see anything they want to. They're on the statute books here saying that they're a local commission. Now, some of them, and this is where this thing gets sticky, you see, some of them don't want to bother with this. Others want to get into the minutest detail and do. I name off quite a number of committees that meet regularly every month. They want a list of exactly who's on that month, who goes off, who's suspended, and they can have it. Now, in the interest of simplification and efficiency and everything else, you know, that we try hard to work on, we did recommend at one point in time, and this caused some furor, I want to say, that we try to reduce this paperwork. Some county officers were religiously, you know, making out these long lists every month at a commission meeting, and sometimes the commission meeting wasn't held even, of all the new cases, the cases went off and everything. A whale of a lot of paperwork involved in this, which we get bothered about, you know, all the time. Anyhow, so we encourage them, you know, to try to cut some of this down. And some of them, and I sent a letter out to every county commission after that because there was misunderstanding. Some of them, you know, misinterpret this as some indication on my part that I didn't, but I would let them have the information, which is really not the case at all. This is the kind of thing.
That's why I think language should be in this.
If they complain,
you can show it to them.
That's why I came up and said, may review these listings.
I think that's a good idea.
May. If you say shall, then you've got to do it all the time. Say may, then they can have it if they want it.
Let's create language to that effect and expand it from listings to listings and relevant information.
That's good.
Do it all to the state level. But if you don't mind, I'd like to qualify that at the state level, it should work through the chairman of the commission so that they're not having to interface with 15 members. And this keeps the thorny question of And it's a thorny question of recipients who may not be as well informed as the rest of the commission on what's going on from harassing the agency head with a host of perhaps not relevant kinds of questions. Can we do that for you?
In fact, I picked up some wording that someone had suggested earlier on this last line of your consolidated amendments. Starts with County Public Welfare Boards. And insert here, shall have access to information regarding persons receiving public assistance. And just strike the words may review listings of.
Well, that sounds good to me. Why don't you go to Jim and write it down? Do that. We can use the same thing for the state and make it through the chairman at the state level.
That satisfying you, Ron?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Moving on to the next two lines, 32, deleting line 22, 23, 24, and most of 25 provides for the substitution of this section that's on page 32, line 25, before the insert. And it describes the manner by which the membership of the commission shall be selected. 8 members shall be selected, two from each of the 4 congressional districts, from county welfare boards, 5 from maybe recipients or former recipients of the aid or service of the public welfare division. 2 should be appointed representatives of state agencies or public or private organizations interested in public welfare.
What would those be?
Well, they can be they could be a foster home administrator, for example, who may be doing business with welfare, or someone in an interfacing program like DVR, employment, possibly mental health extension, a host of options. It could be a public employer or a private person in one of the social work fields, an adoption agency, for example.
Could I comment, Mr. Chairman? I wonder about the need to having the word state agencies in there. You have public or private organizations that would include you.
Yeah, I think that might be a good idea to take that out.
May I say that the wording's there because that ties in with the federal requirement along with the 5%.
Sorry about that,
Jerry. I think we're beginning to get a feeling for what the Welfare Commission are up against.
Yeah, thank you.
For $155 million, we can leave that, whatever it is.
It's that wording, exactly like that, representing us. Now, this has not been a problem particularly because I've got, in the present one, I have a extension service person on, for example, that we work well with them. I've got a private agency person on, Ross of Miller from the Perry Center in Portland. I don't think this would present a problem.
Okay. And we'd take the section right beneath that on line 28 and add those, the language Jerry was talking about, and adding to their advisory consultant may have access, or shall have access. On page 32, line 29, after division, I don't know how we did it this way.
That was to get out from under that local office in county camp.
Yeah, well, we provide services in each office. Now, Jerry was you had some question over the way we worded that, Jerry. We were afraid it was going to raise some questions out in the counties, is that it was the language would be one that we've got a plan or a plot or a scheme to close down a bunch of offices.
It already has.
It's had that effect, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I was sure it would, and as I understood from Andy's testimony the other day, Mr. Chairman, the thrust of this amendment is to get around the situation in one county in which no office is maintained currently. Is that correct? Mm-hmm.
Well, Jerry, I said Sherman County. We actually do not have an office there, but, you know, to be candid about this, this was to, you know, really to give us some running room. It's one thing to provide the service, and that's a must as far as I'm concerned. But I don't think it's always going to be necessary, Jerry, in the Miami-Dade County, to literally have an office there, a physical office, if you, you know, guarantee the service will be available some way. And in the interest of a more efficient administration, as I say, we have combined some counties, but so far this only has left Sherman County without an office, and they don't seem to be worried about this, particularly up there. They come.
Well, you indicated in your testimony that if someone came in to apply for welfare or had some question relative to welfare, they came into the county courthouse, I think came into the county court, as a matter of fact, and some county personnel then called some welfare division personnel in the other county, and the representative of your office then came to Sherman County and conducted service. So you've got, in that case, the county court actually providing some, you know, staff service as far as communication, getting someone out there is concerned. I was wondering if perhaps you could get around the hang-up of having to provide an office in each county administratively, simply by in the courthouse saying, you know, in cooperation with the county commissioners or the county court, this room in the courthouse or you know, the county courtroom or the county clerk or someone else, their office would constitute the welfare office.
Well, that, each county has to have a welfare commission or council. What do we call it? The county welfare council?
Well, it's kind of welfare board.
Then wherever that group physically meets would, in effect, be the local office.
Yeah, for example, in Sherman County, I don't see where the wording of the present bill would require you to go out and rent an office. I think you could just constitute the county court office as the welfare office in cooperation with the county
court. And one of the commissioners is on the board, is he not?
Now,
all three are.
All three of them.
Well, as long as as what is required of a local office is not defined in the statute, if you can paint your number on the door and have it open sometime during each week, I think nominally you will have complied with the law. And if it's you know, got people worried, let's restore the language and not create a problem. Unless you see great problems.
Could I ask Jerry, has there been a lot of static about this change, or just from a couple of places?
Well, it's just starting to grow. There are not very many people aware of the amendment yet. Those who have become aware of it have started to object. You know, we anticipated this, just knowing that young people anticipated this, young people saw the amendment. I mentioned the committee the same day. But I'm sure if this information were widely spread around the state.
Let's fix it up and avoid any of the complaints that we possibly can.
Let's put it right back the way it was and not define office.
Yeah, if you don't define office, I think you work it out.
Last section, page 32, line 31, defines the role of what the county welfare. It says the public welfare division shall determine eligibility, and that's in response to federal requirement. But take the language you're proposed in terms of county welfare boards having shall have access to all relevant information within the program.
Okay, now Ken, can we get your girls to put these in our bills, including the changes, by 1 o'clock tomorrow? 1:30 tomorrow?
We'll try. Yeah, that's not that much of a job. I may want to run some language past you before then on what to put in on this up in Section 70 on passing complaints on through. But I'll show it to you, and if it's acceptable to you, I'll.
Matter of fact, you might get Grace's copy of the bill and do it for her, too.
Let her carry it.
She's not about to carry it.
Off the record, I'm wondering if the county or the state welfare commission would have had much of an option beyond rate of a reduction that's in the last interim. That's what they had done historically over a number of years in the past, but now the funds were limited.
For the most part.
Andy, who makes the governor responsible for this program?
The law.
Chapter 543.
State law.
The federal law.
No, the state law.
State law.
In the closing days of the '69 session, they eliminated the state commission and placed the welfare division directly under the governor.
Well, what Gracie's really complained about is the law we passed in '69 session.
What'll happen under the Department of Human Resources? Same thing.
Well, I think that you can look at that question two ways. From Grace's standpoint, if it had been in the lap of the Welfare Commission, they would have had the options of rate reductions and a few kinds of savings. Being in the hands of the governor, for ill or for worse, with the language that was given to the division in the minutes of the Ways and Means Committee, they were able to find other ways of raising, what, $18 million, $19 million? I don't know what the total.
$19
million. Now, the Public Welfare Commission had no means at all to deal with that kind of question.
No, we didn't have that kind of money. It wasn't around.
That would have been, that $19 million would have come out of the hides of the people in Columbus.
Mayor, are you well aware
within
of
their office.
Is in this bill? Do you know what we're talking about?
Pretty much.
Boring. Yep.
What was that reference?
Boring.
Can you answer anything else?
You're honest.
Should we slip a little sex education?
We're going to have to do something. I'm ready to go. Fruitcake.
Legalized prostitution.
Is there any more to talk about on this bill in the fourth month?
We should have to kick it out. Ready to wrap up as far as we're concerned, unless we've got other questions.
I don't have any more questions on this beauty. Now you've got the Attorney General.
Yeah, and these are included in the stuff I gave you already.
I thought they were.
Yeah.
Didn't you want some delay to review this or something?
Did we cover all of your questions?
Yes, you glossed over one of them rather lightly, but by saying that increasing the Welfare Commission to 15 and providing, what is it, 8 to 5 recipients on there was a federal requirement. I take you at your word, and in that case, have no objection. But if there's any other way that recipient input can be handled other than putting them on the state commission or state review board, we'd much prefer to see it done in some other way. But if it is just flat a federal requirement, then our hands
well. I respond to that, but I'm not sure you were here that the day I explained this, Jerry, that we have to have an advisory committee for daycare, for medical assistance, for the overall welfare agency. We had to combine child welfare services as a program and aid in dependent children as a service for a program. And we have to have an advisory committee also for the adult services program. Social services to adults to get 75% federal matching for that. Now, instead of having, what I need about five advisory committees, even with this one, this still gives me three. That's quite a job at that. And so you have to have one third recipients on this kind of an advisory committee for these purposes. What I'm trying to do is have three here instead of five. You can appreciate that.
Yeah, from an administrative standpoint, that's the same.
And, I still don't think there's anything wrong with having some representative people to serve on your committee, Jerry. Most counties haven't done this, I want to say. And most federals even encourage this be done at the local level. And encourage you to be done this. You can have one of them.
Well, I think the input
they is overweight in that direction, frankly. But
the input is important, but I think it tends to bog things down.
To think about having five advisory committees, talk about bogging the agency down.
Okay, gentlemen, thank you very much. Ken, can I also ask you for a resume on this bill for the benefit of the?
I won't promise that for tomorrow, but I'll do it.
No, I don't need it tomorrow.
Okay,
the hearing on 1061 is completed. Mr. Kennedy, you have some.
I don't know.
You want to take on here?
Here's what I'd suggest. Strike. Maybe you list it.
We're at a work session tomorrow. Let's see if we can't get 1061 out.
It'll be at 209 at 1:30.
209 at 1:30. And then coming up Wednesday, I don't know if you've got your notices yet on that. We've got the bill on public meeting. A couple of barber bills. Bills on Indians education. What the hell's that doing in this committee?
I've got one bill I recommend we refer to another committee.
Rather than tabling it?
We have it here. House Bill 706.
I'll put it right on here.
'05?
There's another bill relating the same subject that the committee on environment. I just demand you to have both bills.
Yeah, he's just going to put up.
So we're going to have their hands. We're going to have debate as to what we really want to call the party.
That's beautiful. Do what?
What was the other suggestion?
Or other relevant?
Well, the Warren G. Gardner bill is an environment.
Is that also your bill?
That's my bill. It's my bill.
Oh, it's my bill.
You spent $400 to get that in here?
Is that what it costs?
No.
$600.
Move it. Take it to the full committee's recommendation.
Okay, we'll do that.
So move.
All right.
Yeah, let's think about that a little more. Because the member might satisfy the inquiry.
We'll do that. Right in the
level.
My suggestion was, I went through the bills today. We've got 7 bills on workman's compensation. I think we've got one hearing on all 7 bills. You're going to probably have to housekeeping, which ones are going to be controversial. And you've got 19 bills. Some of which I've already scheduled. And some of these bills are not stored anywhere, as good as I can determine by them. Some are housekeeping in nature and won't take long. I think you can pull a 4-hour hearing and pull a hearing on the start at 6 until 10, and I think you get the whole damn part. Maybe you want to eliminate what you've already scheduled first. So at the end of on about 12, they get 1 9 here, 6 to 10.
You see, the language would read, the action shall be instituted by the district attorney or the Welfare Recovery Division of the Department of Justice, which restores it to precisely status quo with the elimination of the county commissions of the rest of the bill. Back. On page 32, we put in language, and if you look on the bill itself, the County Public Welfare Board shall receive information and complaints from local citizens and may, at its discretion, transmit such complaints to the Public Welfare Division on matters relating to public assistance programs. Then you pick up insert one on the top of the page on the right. The Public Welfare Division shall, if requested, investigate and report on its finding pursuant to any complaint presented to it by a county public welfare board. That guarantees a response by welfare to anything they may raise. Dropping down insert two, which really just follows right behind this, is that thing that Andy suggested previously in terms of spelling out in more detail what the role of the county welfare board would be. Evaluate the effectiveness of public welfare programs in relation to local needs, determine the need and develop locally sponsored programs to augment public welfare programs, interpret public welfare programs, and inform the public relations role of the county board. Dropping down, you can see on line 19, we've changed from 8 to 15 members, and we struck out the language on page 20 through most of line 25 and substituted what is insert 3, which describes the makeup, 8 from the county boards, 5 from recipients, and 2 more appointed representatives of state agencies, republic and private organizations, and republic welfare. And then going one further, at the end of line 29, we drop the period and add the language, and shall, through its chairman, have access to information regarding persons receiving assistance and other relevant information about programs of the public welfare division. This relates to the state committee. And finally, on the bottom of page 32, we put a period after the word assistance, and then we added the sentence, county public welfare board shall have access to information regarding persons receiving public assistance.
I think those are good, Ken. Andy, that make sure you happy?
Yeah, that's all right. I'm still a little troubled about the office of East County.
Troubled about what?
Well, making a mandatory that be an office in each county. And I'm thinking long range, so I'm not thinking tomorrow or the, you know, I'm thinking long
range. Well, no, we didn't leave that mandatory part in, did we?
It shall have an office in every county, but we said in as much as there is no definition of office.
I think some of them are concerned about it, as I say. Administratively, it can be slowing it down in the long haul, but it won't be a problem now.
I'd rather leave that and worry about it in 2 years and not interpret the law for 2 years.
I really think you have to worry about it, Andy, because I think the county commissioner's office is broad, that's the welfare office. It did not know it.
I move we send this to Florida to pass our recommendation.
Any discussion? It's been moved that we send House Bill 1061 to the committee, full committee, with a due pass recommendation. Clerk, call the roll.
Johnson?
Aye.
Patterson?
Aye.
Kennedy?
Aye. So ordered. Okay, gentlemen, that's all I have.
Thank you.
You think,
we're going to try to keep the control of school boards and school employees on a local level, that by salaries and by other administrative decisions, that you keep those same decisions on bargaining right there. I don't really want to see them. I don't want to see teachers with the right to strike.
This doesn't pertain to teachers.
What?
No, it doesn't exist there.
It's just classified employees, not non-certified employees. As I understand.
That's right. Nothing to do with teachers.
I automatically was thinking when we redefine public employee, so it could bring all public employees under the anti-strike provisions of the law.
That's good.
That didn't imply doing it in such a manner as to change the existing statutes, which provide optionality. You'd have to provide some other option, some other means of describing that it's optional as to whether they're going to come under,
One of the big hang-ups I have with it, Ken, and you might as well go with the Attorney General's headquarters. I'm not convinced, even though Skelton and Lent say that it's not true, but I'm not convinced that the local governments do not have to comply with the recommendations of the PERB.
Yeah.
And I think that just the
I
way
want
I
that
read
clear.
It. Yeah.
Arbitration or conciliation is what you're asking.
That the fact finding in that jazz is looks to me like it may be a little bit of a
I think the state's machinery should be available to either party if they want it.
On the terms they set, mediation, conciliation, or arbitration, and whatever they...
Well,
arbitration,
we don't want any involvement in arbitration, because that's...
only if both parties agreed in advance,
yeah,
prior to any findings that
that's
they wanted it.
I'd buy that. I don't want compulsory arbitration.
No.
Say that again.
The only time you'd have arbitration is if both parties agreed before the fact that they had hired these people to act as arbitrators.
But both parties, not just one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
That still leaves the door open that they can
arbitrate themselves, and you can pick a different third party. It's not the PDRB as they want it.
Well, the reason that I asked the Attorney General, this is quiet over in that office, so we're not making any stir, is to tell us, in fact, are these people out or included in the anti-strike provisions of the general law because of that definition of who is a public employer and then who is a public employee. And that's the one thing that the testimony rose to my mind of concern that maybe needs some change.
Well, if you can get them, recommended amendments.
Okay, we'll try. Can I ask you fellows one question before I break up? You've got a bill in which is House Bill 1500, requires the approval of the City Council or County Governing Body as a condition for obtaining a license to sell or manufacture alcoholic liquor. I'm wondering just how much testimony I need to bring to talk you out of this. This puts,
well, frankly,
it's not a matter of stopping people from getting licenses, it's a provision of how you get a license. It's the invitation of the worst kind of corruption and graft conceivable to put liquor licenses in the hands of cities and
I wouldn't touch that with the
county. Now, there have been three or four
but what
cases.
I don't like is the...
There's the one down in Eugene, there's one in Milwaukee, where they licensed them over the objection of the city.
That's what I don't like. How do we get it back?
Well, it's very difficult, because when you open that door to solve those three or four instances that you'll get testimony on, you're going to open up the...
but you're leaving the good city councils high and dry.
Well, I think you need to ask how many cases have there been and how many licenses are outstanding and over what period of term have you had hearings and decide for yourself if they may not be using the liquor license as a substitute for effective law enforcement within a given city. That's what I'm trying to ask, is how much testimony do you need to talk about?
Well, I'd certainly like to hear from the Liquor Commission on that.
Now, what Martin requires approval of city council or county governing body as condition for obtaining license to sell or manufacture. Now,
every
sell,
license.
Does that mean like opening liquor stores in the city of Ashland?
Not the stores.
Not stores, bars primarily. I don't know if it extends to taverns.
Well, right now, there are no recommendations to the Liquor Control Commission.
Right now, our city council approves whether to approve a license or not, votes to it.
What they do on it doesn't mean anything, is the point.
Well, they're given consideration and weight, and they're a vehicle for drawing attention to the problems. And I think there have been three or four cases in the last three or four years where the Liquor Commission felt that the council was acting in an arbitrary manner in which they had no basis under law by which to refuse the license. You know, the law, for example, you've got a strip joint in Eugene someplace, and the law doesn't make strip joints illegal, so there was no legal basis for the Liquor Commission to deny that license. What they were saying is you're trying to use the Liquor Commission to enforce your own standard of moralities without passing ordinance in your own city.
Yeah, we're just looking for you.
I was closeted with the governor and the attorney general on a little thing called the Davis Bacon Act. I'm sorry.
Could you be available on the night of March 18th, along with Donica or the other guy, to explain?
Earl Fritters.
Either one.
Whichever. Yes,
to explain workman's compensation to this group and then discuss the bills before us. 7:30 in room 105.
Fine.
Will you take care of informing AOI?
Right. 105 or 106?
105.
105.
Yeah. Is there anybody else you would have there to testify on these bills?
Which bills do you have on?
Oh, John.
Maybe who was to have somebody from the board to sell a representative.
Oh, sorry.
Bob?
Yeah, well, that's probably a good idea. Start, I think, with 1545.
This is an update, that's the problem.
Here's another one.
I'll tell you, the
thing that's got Hoss on it and Lent?
The best witness you can get probably would be.
1543, 1544, 1545.
Now, when I met this guest, you were up on
46.
those have to do with procedures primarily. And when I suggested to you that it might be a good idea to have a little discussion about the whole concept of workers' compensation, I was primarily talking about the areas that are in the Senate committee now having to do with temporary total disability, permanent partial disability, and permanent total disability, none of which you had.
Are you sure? I thought we had one of them.
Most of those are procedural, aren't they?
Claims of benefits payable under workman's compensation law for death, permanent total disability, and death during permanent...
Yeah, those go to the dependency duty, huh?
Be recomputed.
Yeah, those are dependency. those are narrow, little isolated areas that certainly demand some attention. But I was talking on the broader aspect of what the heck we're trying to do with workman's compensation and such. And there's three bills really dealing in that. One, they're all Senate bills, all having to do with the weekly benefit to the guy when he's hurt, the permanent partial awards and permanent total awards, on the degree, what a degree is worth in dollars. In other words, presently a degree of injury is worth $55. There's a bill over there that would raise that to 100. Somewhere in routine is some happy ground.
Yeah.
I contend that you're getting at the problem on the wrong end. The plaintiff's attorneys contend that's where you get your justice. It's a matter of philosophy, I think, more than anything else, what you're trying to do. I think you put the guy in the position of needing a big award at the end because you don't adequately compensate him. He's damn near bankrupt when he reaches that point. Case becomes medically stable. But that's where the litigation is. It's not on the period of time he's recuperating from an injury. And this is where I think the relief needs to be. This is where a good segment of the plaintiff attorneys and I fall out as far as concept. Well, we could, but Bud and Harl are, especially Bud is probably his.
I look to some extent on Bud as a prejudiced witness.
Well, I would think that he probably is the least prejudiced witness you can get who handles workman's comp because he does defense work as well. He does all of Argonauta's defense work. And they write this. So you're really getting somebody more objective in the thing than probably any other lawyer.
You are.
Yeah, really.
Okay. I'll ask Bud if he'll come. Do you think we can, in fact, take action on some of these bills at the same time?
I think so. Some of them are. Some of them are not that involved. But I had a real bad experience over in that Senate committee. They wanted to report that bill out without any consideration of the whole concept of benefit schedules. That raised the degree of injury from $55 to $100. They wanted to move on. And the gentleman had just suggested you look at the whole thing before you act on one bill. The benefits in that bill are only about $15 million in the present form. That sort of has a small effect on premium rates.
I'm a little shocked.
Because the employers' associations have agreed that something's got to be done in benefits. And it's a matter of carving up the pie and putting it where it doesn't. See, there was no benefit increases from 1957 to 1965, so we really fell behind.
How come?
The three-way fight. Mm-hmm. The three-way concept of workman's compensation coverage where you can insure with the state funds with the private insurance carrier or be a self-insure, a larger corporation like Weyerhaeuser GP is an example of being self-insured. So they have to conform to the benefit schedule that's in the Act. But this started the fight in 57 and it wasn't resolved until 65. Well, all during this period, well, people's living costs and everything went up while they were on time loss benefits, but there was no benefit increase. So we fell appreciably behind. Now it's a matter of trying to catch up to what we should have done. relation to the overall economy. So, the adjustments that were made 2 years ago were meaningful. The adjustments were made in the 65 Act were meaningful. But not when taken into the cost of living spiral, 1957 versus 1971. So we're trying to get to some area of agreement on where we should take them. The employers and my organization are trying to decide where, what they feel they can afford to pay, and what I want is not necessarily the answer, but it's close to what we can agree on.
Okay, you're talking about a $55 figure.
$55 per degree of injury. What does health care...
What's a...
A degree of injury is the back, nose, how it ever happened, I don't know. This goes clear back to 1913. Take a hand. The loss of a hand is, if it's severed here, at or below the elbow, is worth 124 degrees. We multiply 124 degrees times 55, we'll figure out to roughly $7,800.
Okay.
This is what we're talking about. That bill would make it $12,400. I think the leg's 192 degrees. Now, a serious back injury that results in the impairment of the function of the leg is in the area of unscheduled disability. You can go up to 320 degrees in the unscheduled area, or $17,200. So when you're talking about raising the value of a degree, you have an appreciable effect on these awards that are given at the time that the man's case becomes medically sick. And of course, when the closing and evaluation division of the Workers' Compensation Board assesses the impairment, they do it with these degrees. In other words, 100 degrees or $5,500. Now, the man may contend, especially in the area of unscheduled, that this is not adequately compensating for pain and suffering. So he asks for a hearing. And the hearing officer can either affirm or modify or increase that award. When the man isn't satisfied there, he can appeal that finding to the Workers' Compensation Board and then on to the circuit court. This is where the litigation comes up. It's my contention, and not necessarily the contention of plaintiff lawyers who also happen to represent, in some cases, local unions, that we ought to do something real dramatic in this area. I think we ought to do something with the system that gets the man in the position at that point in his life where he's got to litigate to try to get some justice.
Who pays the attorney's fees at that point?
They come out of any additional award the man might get. They're set by regulation.
What if he didn't get any additional award?
There's no attorney fee.
There's no attorney
fee. No. The only way any attorney's firms make any money in workers' compensation is on a volume basis. There's not any money in workers' compensation when you consider one case. The only way you can make any money in this is on a mill basis where you've got a lot of referrals coming to you in this area. Now, I don't think that plaintiff lawyers are necessarily bad, because on the other side of the coin, all you've got to do is look at the fact that there's defense lawyers all over the ballpark too. But the only reason nobody finds anything bad about them is because their payment is cranked into the premium fees charged the employer. In other words, part of the reserve set aside for administration is attorney fees. But this is the most litigious, is that a good word?
As far as I know what you mean.
Law that you can possibly conceive. And when it was passed in 65, we said it's a full employment law for lawyers. But I think what we're doing, now this is merely a philosophical thing. We are forcing the man at the time his case becomes medically stable to litigate, because we've got him almost bankrupt, because the weekly benefit to him during the period of recovery from an injury is so darn low that he's got his creditors right on his doorstep, so he's trying to get all the bucks he can to get off the hook.
What's that right now?
It's $60 for a single man, it's $65 for a man and wife, it's $70 for a man and wife and one child, it's 71, 2, 3, 4, up to 75 for each additional defendant.
Per now, week.
Yeah, but the system that rewards dependency is not a good system because it's administratively costly. In other words, every single check has to be drawn independently. I'd like to go to a system that you had a weekly benefit. You don't have dependency consideration in unemployment insurance. Now, I think if you peg the thing around, if you could ever devise a formula that was on the average industrial rate of the state or something, so that you were fairly closely approaching what a man's normal take-home pay is after taxes and everything, you would do away with a lot of litigation because he's not going to get himself in the economic bind. All of his medical needs are paid for under workman's compensation. His hospitalization, he has no cost to him other than the loss of his job and his earnings of tax. So if you could get a benefit schedule eventually that approximated the man's normal take-home pay, I think you would cut down tremendously on litigation, the man trying to get more dollars than he actually has coming to him on the basis of his injury. Plus, another thing you could do in this system, and this is what our advisory committee to the Workman's Compensation Board is trying to explore. We've got a rehab system that is credited as being one of the best in the nation. As far as one of the best in the nation, the rest of them must be terrible. Because our rehab center in Portland, all it is a back evaluation center. We're not rehabilitating anything. Here's a tragedy, I think. They are seeing a patient at this back evaluation center on an average of 18 months after the man was injured. This is the first contact that man has. Anybody that's trying to do something for him. Now you compare that with the British Columbia system, and all of us have been up there and gone through their mill. They've got a most beautiful setup. They've got their average weekly load in their rehab center is about 550, about the same as ours, but ours are cases that are beyond hope. The first thing you do when a guy's laying around doing nothing, you're making a vegetable out of the guy mentally. Causing all kinds of concerns about what my future had. And these severe back injuries, the average guy is 41 years old and he's got an eighth grade education. What hope has that man got at that point in his life to be rehabilitated for anything? But the British Columbia system is different. They got a bunch of, where we've got a bunch of social workers in our DDR, and one of the requirements is you have a master's degree in sociology before you can be caseworker. What they got up there is a bunch of reformed drunks and broken down business agents who go out and see the guy 3 or 4 days after the injury while he's laying on his back in the hospital and say, hey Joe, they talk his language first of all. Look, we've got to get you out of here so we can start giving you some skills that are going to make you employable. And from then on, they hold that guy by the hand and they put him back in a job. First of all, what most guys don't realize is that the employer that he was working for at the time he hurt, that he was hurt, in all probability, he's liking him back because he's got an investment in that guy's training. But this contact's never made in our system. We went into the medical director's office. I hate to ramble on, but I get enthused about this, man. We went into the medical director's office. He was very hospitable and just gave us free rein to look at anything we wanted to. And we were talking. He said, well, I'm going to have to excuse myself. I've got these gentlemen coming, why don't you join me for lunch? He says, you want to look through some of the cases I'm talking about? They're right here. These are the interviews I'm making this afternoon. So I just picked up the first one, a random one. It was a longshoreman. He had been injured 12 days before, and they were already interviewing him that day and evaluating
him. This was British Columbia.
Right. 12 days, and it was a back injury incident. 12 days after the injury, they got him in the rehab center.
And ours are 18 months.
18 months. Another thing they do, they put a flag on a guy after he's got his second back injury because back injuries are something that once you got one, anything can trigger it, and nobody knows how to really treat the thing. They start retraining that guy so he's not going to be exposed to the incident of risk which will cause him to become a permanent total disability.
The back injury is a
background, you may not be so bad if he finds another job.
That's right.
Now, how do they...
Or yeah. learn to work with it. They've got physical training programs up there that teach a guy how to work.